You're good, Margaret. I love Big Macs. At 6'2", 240 pounds, that's no surprise. Two all-beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun. In sixth grade, a friend and I called into a local radio station. One of us had to sing the Big Mac theme in like 5 or 10 seconds to win a Big Mac radio. I did it, no problem, but he ended up keeping the radio. I was no Ray Kroc. If you've seen the movie The Founder, you understand the reference. Ray Kroc was the founder of the McDonald's franchise. He wasn't the founder of McDonald's or their speedy system of preparing food. That honor belongs to the McDonald brothers, Mac and Dick, who started making McDonald's hamburgers in Southern California in the 1950s. The movie does a great job capturing the complexities of their story. In order to build the franchise, Mr. Kroc worked hard, made great personal sacrifices, and cheated the McDonald brothers. The McDonald brothers, having devoted themselves to the quality of their product, had limited success in trying to franchise on their own. But because of Mr. Kroc's work, walked away with a couple million dollars between them. I had warned Margie we would be eating at McDonald's after the movie. There's no way I could sit through a feature film about McDonald's and not satisfy my craving. I can hardly drive by a McDonald's billboard without driving through the drive-thru. I'm hooked. I got my way. We ate at McDonald's. But if Margie has her way, it'll be the last time. She has a hard time with Mr. Kroc's duplicity, some of which continues in McDonald's business practices today. I get it. As a Christian, how can we support a business built on duplicity? Oh, it's just business. But can Christians just wash their hands this way? I get where Margie's coming from. And frankly, she's always been a better person than me when it comes to such things. But I love my Big Macs. So I said to her, are we going to stop listening to NPR? They received a pretty nice gift from Mrs. Kroc. Are we going to leave the church? Many indigenous cultures were destroyed because of the missionary movement's association with colonialism. Moral purity is a hard commodity to find in our world of sin. Moral purity is a hard commodity to find, given we have all sinned and fallen short of God's glory. But there appears to be no shortage of self-righteous people on the right and the left who believe they have claimed the moral high ground on a whole host of issues, even more complex than those raised by the founder. Now, I should say, I don't count Margie in their number. Even though we disagree on eating at McDonald's, she understands the complexity of the issue. Nevertheless, it raises important questions. When confronted with these complex moral issues, what shall we do? How shall we respond? Does our faith in Jesus Christ come into play at all? Or do we resign ourselves to following the way of the world? Do we try to fight the evil that surrounds us? Or do we hunker down and just try to stay pure until God comes? My friends, I think these are important questions for our time and get to the heart of our reading from Matthew this morning. What does it mean for us to be the salt of the earth? What does it mean for us to be a light unto the nations? Many of us like to think if we were confronted with real evil, we would take the path of Dr. Bonhoeffer or Dr. King. For looking back, it's easy to see they were following the path of Jesus. But would we? Did we? We are good people, or at least as good as sinful people can be. We are good people. We want to do good. We don't always succeed. We don't always agree on what the good is. Sometimes it's because we're blinded by our own desires. We fail to see the common good. Sometimes it's because what is good is not clear. There are competing goods or unintended consequences. Sometimes, as in Bonhoeffer's decision to participate in Hitler's assassination, there is no good option, only the lesser of two evils. How do sinful people in a sinful world find their way to do good? Our reading from Matthew this morning follows the Beatitudes and is a nice complement to our charge from Micah last Sunday to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with God. Jesus tells us, you are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hid. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under the bushel basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. Be salt. Be light. That's the answer. But what's the question? Matthew doesn't say, but it's not hard to figure out. God's people were living under Roman military occupation. Most of us have no idea what that would be like. We might imagine it to be like Nazi Germany or British colonial rule in India or apartheid in South Africa or the reign of the Soviet Union over Eastern Europe, but we have not endured it ourselves. Even more, as horrible as the examples I offer are, they are all short-lived in comparison to what God's people endured. Since the days of the Babylonian exile, God's people had lived under foreign rule for some 500, 600 years. Though they were home now in Jerusalem, they were being oppressed by Gentiles. Adding insult to injury, the promise of God's Messiah, who would set them free from their captivity had yet to be fulfilled, a promise they had lived with all their lives. Jesus was speaking to a hopeless, desperate people when he challenged them to be salt and light. They were asking questions not unlike we ask today. What does it say about God that we have languished this way? What does it say about us that we are forced to live under Roman oppression? What shall we do? How shall we respond? Jesus' answer is clear. Be who you are. You are salt. You are light. Jesus' answer was clear, but there were competing voices as well. There were the Sadducees, recognizing the overwhelming strength of their oppressor. The Sadducees counseled collaboration with Rome. There were the Zealots, remembering the Maccabean revolt against the Seleucid Empire and the restoration of worship in the temple in Jerusalem, where we get Hanukkah. The Zealots believed their only hope was to revolt. The Pharisees were divided. Some believed they must take up the sword. Others believed they must strive to be ever more righteous, hunker down, and remain pure. Jesus took issue with them all. To the collaborators, he preached, "Render to Caesar what is Caesar, and to God what is God's." He challenged the Zealots to reject violence and love their enemies. He called the Pharisees to embrace grace over righteousness, seeking to preserve their identity, focusing on purity in diet, life, and marriage. The Pharisees were living as if they were still in exile. Jesus challenged them to live the kingdom life as salt and light, trusting God's abundant grace. Focusing on righteousness, the Pharisees were waiting for God to act. As they had done for so many years in exile, they were seeking to preserve their identity. Surrounded by Gentiles, they embraced a ghetto mentality of withdrawal and protection, that they might be found righteous when God took action. Jesus saw God was already at work. God was already doing a new thing. The kingdom of heaven had come. Preserving their identity was no longer enough. God's people must bear witness to God's work of salvation. God's people must be salt and light and show the world God's love. God created them to be salt. But the Pharisees lost their taste. God created them to be light. But God's people hid under a bushel. Jesus came preaching a revolutionary word of hope to the hopeless. The hopeless, desperate people. You are salt. You are light. Be who God created you to be. So what does it mean to be salt and light? Friends, you are the answer to that question. Yes, the Bible gives us some great examples. Micah speaks of doing justice, loving kindness, and walking humbly with God. Matthew speaks of offering food and drink to the hungry and thirsty, welcoming the stranger, clothing the naked, caring for the sick, visiting those in prison. Jesus speaks about forbearance and forgiveness. The Bible gives us some great examples, but you are salt and light. You are the answer to the question. As we said a moment ago, life is complicated and chaotic. We face challenging choices. We strive to provide for our families, educate our children, care for our neighbors, be good people. But the way is not always clear in our complex and ever-changing world. We confront a cacophony of contrary and conflicting voices. We watch as those we love make friends with a culture that consumes them. We are confronted with zealous friends fighting to raise our social consciousness with every decision we make. We seek guidance from a church consumed with righteousness and all but silenced by divisions over social and cultural issues. What does this chaos, anxiety, fear, conflict, and uncertainty say about us? About God? What shall we do? How shall we respond? So many are desperate, hopeless, angry. What can we do? Be who you are. Be salt. Be light. But what does that mean? Beloved, you have to find out for yourself. That is the life of faith. We have a great cloud of witnesses in the church. We have our Bible, we have our Savior, Jesus Christ. To paraphrase June Fitton, the time has come to fall on our knees and pray to God that we might see ourselves as Jesus sees us, and be the people God has created us to be. Salt and light. Thanks be to God.